Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. You can watch today's program by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or garynall.com. I'm going to be doing commentaries by Robert Jensen. There are no heroes in the illegal and immoral world, wars from commondreams.com, For Whom the Bells Toll, a very interesting commentary today from Ralph Nader. And Let Us Now Return to Those Thrilling Mistakes of Yesteryear by David Sirota. Also, The Swine Flu Review, The Case for Reforming U.S. Emergency Health Laws, and my guest in the second part of our program. We did not intend to have a guest in this hour, but I was asked at the end of our noon show by Carrie Lee, our program director, about factory farming and the egg recall and how this necessitates the swift passage of a piece of legislation, S-510, the FDA Food Safety Modernization Act. And I will share my points of view of why I think that they're not only wrong, but had they done the scholarship and taken the time to actually understand the S-510, they would realize why millions of Americans, myself included, oppose this, and it will lead to a form of food tyranny. We're going to show you the down and dirty part of S-510, then you can determine for yourself, is this piece of legislation should be killed or one that we should be embracing? But first, as always, the latest from the real scientific journals, not the American media, on nutrition and healing. From the Times of India, a major study done at Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center and Arthur James Cancer Hospital, and published in a peer-reviewed journal. And I mentioned all the studies that I cite are published in major peer-reviewed journals, and that's because sometimes people say, well, how do we know that that's really good? Well, because you have to look at the study, who published it, how comprehensive it was. Well, this one's about broccoli and Brussels sprouts, the very things I advocate that you eat on a daily basis. These are part of the cruciferous family. And what these studies show at these respected institutions is that broccoli and Brussels sprouts could block cancer. Let me quote this. Quote, scientists have found how a substance which is produced when eating broccoli and Brussels sprouts can block the proliferation of cancer cells. Quote, these findings show how I3C affects cancer cells' normal growth. Now, I3C is indole-3-carbinol, and by the way, first of any radio show in the United States, I was talking about indole-3-carbinol 10 years ago, and why the more cruciferous vegetables, including radishes, will help you prevent cancer. Here's what it says. Quote, the laboratory and animal study discovered a connection between I3C, indole-3-carbinol, and a molecule called CDC25A, which is essential for cell division and proliferation. The research showed that I3C, that's from your broccoli and Brussels sprouts, caused the destruction of that molecule and thereby blocks the growth of breast cancer cells. This is from the actual study. Quote, CDC25A is present at abnormally high levels in about a half of breast cancer cases, and it's associated with a poor prognosis, meaning you're going to die. But indole-3-carbinol has a striking effect on cancer cells and how it blocks that. So eat your broccoli, your Brussels sprouts, your asparagus, your cauliflower, mustard, yeah, good old yellow mustard, any way you like it, and that can help block and prevent cancer. Let's see, you'd like to curb your cravings. How about eucalyptus? That's right. Don't know how to curb that craving for hazelnut chocolate? Well, just imagine the smell of eucalyptus and your problem will be solved. Psychology researcher Dr. Eva Kemps and a colleague, Dr. Tigerman, examined the psychology of food cravings and found that desperate cravings for food can be stopped by easily asking the person affected to image the smell of eucalyptus. It can have strong implications for drug and alcohol addiction and help in treating eating disorders like bulimia. Kemp's and colleagues said that while most people will experience a food craving on occasion, these are not necessarily pathological. Quote, however, like cravings for cigarettes, alcohol, caffeine, or drugs, they can pose significant health risks for some individuals. Food cravings have been shown to trigger binge eating episodes, which in turn contribute to both obesity and disordered eating, especially bulimia nervosa. And then they talk about the experiment. Evidently, eucalyptus, the smell of eucalyptus, has a very profound effect in stopping the cravings for these substances. Now, it's easy to get eucalyptus. You can get it as essential oil, and therefore you can just take maybe, a little tiny dispenser. And a dispenser is just a little tiny apparatus, and you put the oil upside down in that dispenser, or you put two or three drops in it, and then it bubbles, and it has an air pressure, so the air then takes the pheromones, the little molecules, and disperses it throughout the air. You smell the eucalyptus, you lose your cravings. Inexpensive, all natural, no side effects. Think about that now. From the American College of Rheumatology, a new study, as reported by the American College of Rheumatology's annual scientific convention, omega-3 fatty acids, those are the omega-3 oils that are so important for your good health, well, they help with lupus. And they benefit lupus activity as well as cardiovascular events of patients with lupus. And systemic lupus erythematosus, also called SLE or lupus, is a chronic, really bad inflammatory disease that can affect the skin, the joints, the kidneys, lungs, nervous system, and other organs. Now, patients with lupus may also develop immature cardiovascular disease. And in this, it was a randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind study. They either received a placebo for 24 weeks or the omega-3 fatty acids. This was done at Queen's University in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and they found that, quote, this study confirms the beneficial effects of omega-3 fish oils in improving the symptoms of lupus and also provides evidence of the potential cardioprotective effect that you may have in this group of patients, unquote. I'm suggesting 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day of fish oil, the omega-3 fatty acids. Antioxidants abound in ripe fruit. Who says this? Medical News Today, mainstream medicine. Here's what it says. Fall, the seasons of colors, leaves turn red, yellow, and brown. The disappearance of the color green and the simultaneous appearance of these other colors are a sign of ripening a fruit. A team led by Bernard Kratler at the University of Innsbruck in Austria has now determined that the breakdown of chlorophyll in ripening apples and pears produces the same decomposition products as those in brightly colored leaves. As the researchers report in the Journal of Chemistry, Natural Chemistry, these colorless decomposition products include highly reactive antioxidants, making them very healthy. What's this mean in lay language? It means that when you have very brightly colored fruits and vegetables, like a plum, a cherry, strawberry, raspberry, blackberry, that as they hit full maturity, that's when they're highest in antioxidants. But even if you were to dry them using natural low heat, meaning under 120 degrees heat, you're still preserving the antioxidants. That's why we want tree-ripened, shrub-ripened, vine-ripened fruits and vegetables. They have a better taste. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's experienced tasteless, cardboard, pithy-like tomatoes. no matter what they look like on the outside. Tasteless pears, tasteless cherries, tasteless apples, tasteless peaches, pithy peaches, mushy peaches. Why? It's simple. When you allow a fruit to get to its height of ripeness, the enzymes are most active. The enzymes work with the chlorophyll to enhance phytonutrient activity. All that increases taste. And that's why there's nothing like a vine-ripe tomato or a peach right off the tree. Last week I was out west and I was in front of this restaurant and they had an apple tree, a type of apple I hadn't seen before. And I asked the owner, in fact, you can see the pictures of my trip up on GaryNall.com. And I said, can I have an apple? They said, sure, there are thousands of apples on the trees. And I tried it. It was very sweet. It was organic, no sprays. But it was allowed to ripen. Now, right now, as we speak, I have oranges, grapefruits, and lemons growing on my trees down in Florida. Most people don't think of being able to pick a piece of citrus in August. Why not? Because they pick them as soon as they're ripe in December, January at the latest. But I found that if you only pick up the fruit when it falls to the ground, then you're getting it at its most succulent, its highest point of taste, and they'll stay on the tree for a long period of time. In fact, it's kind of interesting because the new fruit is already on the tree and maturing. And I've had fruit last as long as 11 months without picking it. Cherries will generally last about 4 weeks. Mulberries about 3 weeks. And figs about a month. But citrus lasts much longer. Star fruit about a month. So the idea that the moment you see something is ripe, you have to go and pick it is simply not true. You can let it stay on the tree until it falls. Then I pick it up off the ground. That's when I eat it. And finally, healthy diet cuts dementia risk. I just came from a meeting upstairs in my office, and it was really a debate. It was a fun debate. A leading ophthalmologist, mainstream doctor, and I were having a discussion about American healthcare, and we took completely different views about healthcare. And I'm saying it's terrible, and he's saying it's great. But one thing we both agreed upon was that if we had healthier diets, we would cut our dementia risk. And then I look here, and this is exactly what this new study shows. This was done at the French National Institute of Health and Medical Research in Bordeaux. Quote, the results should have considerable implications for public health. Here's what it says. More evidence that a diet rich in oily fish and vegetables can reduce the chances of dementia later in life has been uncovered. Studies published in U.S. journals suggest a Mediterranean diet or long-term beta-carotene supplement diet could ward off illness. Both contain antioxidants, which can protect the brain from damage. The Alzheimer's Society said that most people could cut the risk by eating a healthy diet. The first study in the journal Neurology looked at diets of more than 8,000 healthy people, women over the age 65. They found that those who regularly ate omega-3 oils found in some cooking oils and certain types of fish were far less likely to develop dementia over the following four-year period. In fact, people who ate fish at least once a week had a 40% lower risk of dementia, while eating fruits and vegetables once a day reduced it by 35%. However, eating other types of cooking oils, such as sunflower oil, doubled the risk of Alzheimer's. And that's why we tell you which oils to eat. Now, this is a very good diet, and I certainly support it, but here's a study that should be done and that hasn't been done. I'm going to do it in the fall. I'm in starting month 11 of a 12-month study. Once that's done, then I'm going to do this study. because we've already done it. We have reversed dementia, reversed Alzheimer's, reversed Parkinson's, reversed multiple sclerosis. But we haven't done it in enough people for it to be statistically significant. So they're talking about preventing, and I'm talking about reversing. So this should be very interesting when I start this study in about 3 months. And we'll be doing this nationwide. I'm Gary Knoll. That's just the opening round. We have a lot of things to talk with you about. Back in a moment with my guest to take on this issue. Please stay with us.
Why don't everybody put your hands together? Clap along with the music. The song is not a very hard one, you see, but I'd like everybody to listen to what I'm saying to you. You're the reason I want to live, girl. I swear you're the reason I want to give. It's part of my body.
I'd like to welcome all of you from throughout the world. We're broadcasting also WPFW. 25 years every week I'm on the air here, and an awful lot of people working in governmental agencies listen in. I thank you for that and taking the information and applying it in whatever way is constructive to the different agencies in which you work. Today, we are doing a little impromptu news conference on the air, S510. I consider this one of the worst pieces of legislation in American history. I consider it one step towards tyranny. I consider it one of the most vile and evil piece of legislation. But those are just opinions. We need facts. And to help us with these facts, I've invited Diane Miller. She is an attorney, co-founder, and board member of the National Health Freedom Coalition, which is the largest advocacy organization protecting citizens' rights and freedoms to all forms of medicine and health modalities. In fact, she designed the health freedom legislation for the state of Minnesota, and she also is co-moderator of the World Health Freedom Assembly that challenges implementation of codex rules that would hinder the practice of alternative medicine. Her website is nationalhealthfreedom.org. Nice to have you with us today, Diane.
Hello, Gary. Thank you for having me.
Diane, up front, I'm telling the people, without any conversation with you, since we haven't previously talked on this, I'm opposed, based upon reading carefully the proposed legislation, S510. I see this as a form of tyranny, but I also see it very cleverly marketed by people who are using the egg recall scare of a half a billion eggs, that if we only had this piece of legislation, it would protect us from having factory farming incidents and would ensure better compliance with having healthier food reach the marketplace. I say that's not true. I say we have legislation currently on the books that, if properly enforced, would more than protect the American public. I see this as a way of trying to get genetically engineered foods as the food source in America, and making other natural foods, heirloom foods, natural seed banks, organic food, as being considered not compliant with the standards they would adapt, and therefore, in effect, putting that whole measure out of business. Those are my thoughts. Show me now where I am wrong in my thinking.
I think I would ditto many of the things you just said, but in general, I think you can see the greatest way that I assess things like this, and especially something this large that affects the whole country, is what was the first bill? What did the first bill look like that they put out on the table on this food safety? The first bill had nothing in it that would even look like it would support natural organic farming, small farmers, direct farm to consumer. I mean, it was basically a big ag bill that was literally going to make it worse for everything in this country than it already is. So why should the American people have to go tell these people how to draft a bill that would accommodate natural, holistic, ecologically sound practices in agriculture? Why should we have to do that? Why should that first bill that they put on the table, it's because of what you said. It was a big ag bill that was literally going to regulate big ag in some way, in some fashion, but to put little guys out of business. And the things that they put out there for big ag in the bill to regulate weren't really addressing the real reasons why there was any food safety issues. I mean, it was more regulation, but would it really make things safe? Our large industrialization of food, is that safe in any way, shape, or form? So we have the brain power in this country, and we have the hearts and the compassion to actually design good agricultural practices. But instead, we have fear mongers that make crazy, scary things happen, and then we get more police power in place to go after people that are not enforceable, and all the little natural, organic, holistic, direct farm, local trade people are put out of business by these huge regulations. The model of the way that the legislation is drafted is wrong. It's just plain morally wrong. It's going to kill people, and it's going to eliminate a lot of people. I mean, I've been watching the trials for the raw milk issues in Minnesota. They even came into a family's home that had bought some raw milk from a farmer.
Don't even get me started on what I think of these people.
I mean, if that's what our country's coming to, then we're in major trouble. So
no, it's not. No, hold on. You're wrong, Diane. Look what you just said. You said what our country is coming to. We've been there.
We are there.
Yeah.
And so we have to kill S-510 until it looks like what food safety should look like in the real world.
Well, here in my hands, I have the entire bill. Unlike other radio hosts that talk about issues, we actually do scholarship here. We can be held accountable, and I believe everyone should be held accountable by what they say. Here is the actual full bill in my hands, all right? I've read it backwards and forwards. Now let me take a moment and digress and read an article by Steve Green. Okay, then we'll come back to you, then we're going to open this up for calls. Evil Bill S-510 is hissing in the grass. I'm quoting, S-510, the Food Safety Modernization Act, may be the most dangerous bill in the history of the United States. It is our food, what the bailout was to the economy. Only we can live without the money. Quote, if accepted, S-510 would preclude the public's right to grow, own, trade, transport, share, feed, and eat each other's food that nature makes. It would become the most offensive authority against the cultivation, trade, consumption of food, and agricultural products of one's choice. It will be unconstitutional and contrary to natural law, or, if you like, the will of God. Dr. Shiv Chopra, by the way, from Canada, a whistleblower who was in their form of FDF there. It is similar to what India faced with imposition of the salt tax during British rule. Only S-510 extends control over all food in the United States, violating the fundamental human right to food. S-510 would give Monsanto unlimited power over all U.S. seed, food supplements, and food and farming. The history. In the 1990s, the Hazardous Analysis Critical Control Points, or the HACCP, purportedly to deal with contamination in the meat industry. This HACCP delighted the offending corporate World Trade Organization meat packers, since it allowed them to inspect themselves, eliminating thousands of local food processors with no history of contamination, and centralized meat into their control. S-510 fails on moral, social, economic, political, and constitutional and human survival grounds. 1. It puts all U.S. food and all U.S. farms under Homeland Security and the Department of Defense in the event of contamination or an ill-defined emergency. Two, it would end U.S. sovereignty over its own food supply by insisting on compliance with the World Trade Organization, thus threatening national security. It would end the Uruguay Round Agreement Act of 1994, which put U.S. sovereignty and U.S. law under perfect protection. Instead, S51 says, quote, compliance with international agreements, nothing in this act or an amendment made by this act shall be construed in a manner inconsistent with the agreement establishing the World Trade Organization or any other treaty or international agreement to which U.S. party is a party. Next, it would allow the government under maritime law to define introduction of any food into commerce, even direct sales between people, as smuggling into the United States. Since under that law, the U.S. is a corporate entity and not a location, quote, entry of food into the United States covered food produced anywhere within the landmass of this country and entering into it by virtue of being produced. Four, it imposes Codex Alimentarius on the United States, a global system of control over food. It allows the United Nations, the World Trade Health Organization, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, and the World Trade Organization to take control of every food on Earth and remove access to natural food supplements. Its bizarre history and its expected impact in limiting access to adequate nutrition while mandating genetically engineered food, genetically engineered animals, pesticides, hormones, irradiation of food threatens all safe and organic food and health itself, since the world knows now it needs vitamins to survive, not just to treat illness. Five, it would remove the right to clean, store, and thus own seed in the United States, putting control of seeds in the hands of Monsanto and other multinationals, threatening U.S. security. How to criminalize them? It includes the NAIS, an animal traceability program that threatens all small farmers and ranchers raising animals. The UN is participating through the World Health Organization, the FAO, and World Health Organization and the World Organization of Animal Health in allowing mass slaughter of even heritage breeds of animals and without proof of disease. Biodiversity in farm animals is being wiped out to substitute genetically engineered animals on which corporations hold patents. Animal disease can be falsely declared. S510 includes the Center for Disease Control despite its corrupt involvement in the H1N1 scandal, which is now said to have been concocted by the corporations. 7. It extends a failed destructive HACCP to all food, thus threatening to do to all local food production and farming what HACCP did to meat production, put it in corporate hands and worsen food safety. 8. It deconstructs what is left of American economy. It takes agriculture and food, which are the cornerstones of all economies, out of the hands of the citizens and puts them into the hands, total control of multinational corporations influenced by the UN, the World Health Organization, and the World Trade Organization, with the CDC acting as agents, with Homeland Security as enforcer. The chance to rebuild the economy based on farming, ranching, gardens, food production, natural health, and all the jobs, tools, connected occupations would be eliminated. 9. It would allow the government to mandate antibiotics, hormones, slaughterhouse waste, pesticides, and genetic and modified organisms. This would industrialize every farm in the United States, eliminate local organic farming completely, greatly increase global warming from increased use of bio-based products and long-standing and long-distance delivery of foods, and make food even more unsafe. The five items listed, the five pillars of food safety, are precisely the items in the food supply which are primary source of its danger. And number 10, and finally, its uses food crimes as the entry into police state power and control. The bill postpones defining all the regulations to be imposed, postpones defining crimes to be punished, postpones defining penalties to be applied. It removes fundamental constitutional protections from all citizens in the country, making them subject to a corporate tribunal with unlimited power and penalties without judicial review, meaning it ends the rule of law in the United States. Unquote. Your thoughts, please.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have read over the bill and the manager's amendments, and I would say I could, word for word, probably verify about two-thirds of the verbiage that you just read just by the language of the bill, and a lot of the rest of the implications of what you just read will be true because of basic public policy in the bill. They have left the discretion up to the FDA, and we in the natural health world know that the FDA does not act kindly towards anything natural health-wise.
Is it not also true that they can decide how they want to punish someone that they has violated any of their rules?
They gave a lot of rulemaking capability in the bill. And so those rules will come out eventually, but the discretion that they left in the bill, instead of taking the tester amendment is not on the bill yet, and instead of saying, you know, all farms or all facilities under $500,000 are completely exempt from this bill, they said, you know, the FDA will make, you know, rules to, or will be able to use its discretion when dealing with small farmers. It's just such marshmallow language. Everybody knows that they couldn't stand up to it. So it's like the food crimes to police power is basically what's happening.
I got specific questions for you, Diane. I want you to answer them if you would, please.
If I can.
I've read the bill repeatedly. I see in here where they have the discretion to determine the type of arrest process and due process after that, and it is not open to oversight, and it is not open to other people's interpretation within the legal system. In effect, they could do whatever they wanted to you once they deemed that you had somehow broken the law.
Yes, my understanding is that there is no. My understanding is that there is no judicial review.
That's correct. So let me ask you a question: Do you trust the FDA?
No.
Have you ever known anyone to stand up for the American public outside of Dr. Graham at the FDA and say what they were doing was wrong?
Jonathan Emard has gone after the FDA and freedom of speech a number of times. It takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. And no matter, even if you win, you'd have to spend years in court with a lot of money. It should be the opposite. It should be
okay.
The burden of proof should always be on the government.
I agree. Now, I have some specific, I'm going to go through these quickly because we're going to open this up for calls. Were we told by the President of the United States early on in the Iraq War that there was no rendition? Yes, we were told there was no rendition. No one even knew what rendition was. Were we told there was any torture? Weren't we told specifically there was no torture? Americans don't torture? It's a matter of public record.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Have we ever found any chemical, biological weapons or weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? No. Now, did we find out that they were rendering people by the thousands to Egypt and to Jordan and other countries where they could be interrogated? Did they use waterboarding? Yes, they did. Is waterboarding legal by the Geneva Convention? No, it is not. So I got a question for you. Knowing that we've become a police state, knowing that people have the right of power to get away with crimes against humanity, whether you're a pharmaceutical company that kills 50,000 people with Vioxx and you pay a fine of $5.85 billion and you walk free and you get a bonus, who's to say that if they found you growing some organic tomatoes, they couldn't arrest you and waterboard you? It's a hypothetical and an exaggerated statement, but theoretically they could. And that bothers me because every time we're told they would never do that, they do something so egregious that we can't believe it. Did we not just give $747 billion for the stimulus to be bailed out? Have we been told where that money went? No. Who got it? No. And how it would help Americans? It hasn't helped anyone except the Wall Street banks. Did they give themselves bonuses and buy competing companies? Yes. Did it help their stock and their value and hence their shareholders? Yes. We were lied to, manipulated. Did we have a health care bill that actually makes our health better? No. Were we lied to? Yes. Did the people in power come in there, the insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, hospital for profit corporations make it to their advantage? Yes. Did we have a Wall Street reform bill that passed that was supposed to clean up Wall Street? Did it change derivatives? No. Credit default swaps? No. Trading commodities like oil, water, and food? No. Did it change how much the ratio between what a bank has on its books and its capacity to loan money? No. Did it cap in the credit card rates? No. So now we're supposed to have the very same people who, when the telecommunications company were caught illegally eavesdropping and wiretapping, that they made a bill, the FISA bill, that made it now legal for them to engage in illegal activities. And somehow I'm supposed to believe that a bill whose enforcement is under Homeland Security is somehow going to say, trust us, we're not going to do too much harm to you. We won't beat you or kill you or imprison you or send you off to a torture place in some other country. They may not. But there's no rule or regulation that says that they can't, and there's no standard, nor is there any oversight. Surely at some point, we have to be a little more aware of what people in power have done to take power. Those are my thoughts. Please challenge me.
Well, this is, okay, all of what you just said, given everything true, everything incredibly true, here we go. We're standing here. We're Americans. We're in our hometown. We're looking out at the lawn. We got our kids. We've got whatever. We're going to go get our raw milk. What can Americans do is what my work is. Because we've got a S-510 with all the politics around it and all the corporate money around it and all the lobbyists around it on the table. We still have the ability to affect that bill vote.
Kill the bill.
And so what I'm saying is, okay, what can these people, what can we as Americans do? You know what? Our biggest power are our relationships with the community, the people we live, the state we live, the local sheriff, the big mayor, the police station. Our relationships still matter in America. And if we're going to turn this country around from the decrepit state that it's in, we have to build it from the ground up. And so we're going to go into the Minnesota legislature and say, you're never going into another couple's house for raw milk. So we're never letting you go into a couple's house without, you know, without the truth, without the real story. And so what does that language look like? We are a country of laws. We don't have a monarch. We don't, you know, the words on
that bill.
How many people read that bill? You read that bill? Americans have to know what the words say because we are a country of laws. If we have a problem, we look to the law. If the law isn't what we want, if it doesn't reflect our vision, if the corporates have actually bought off the words in our law books, if they have bought this off, we're not going to make it as a country, period. So to turn this country around, Americans have to be lawmakers. They have to care about what the laws say. They have to kill a bad bill. They have to support good bills. And my job as the National Health Freedom Coalition is we draft good bills. We try and get language into law that reflects the evolution of our culture into a good, holistic, sound country. But how many people are thinking, what do I want the law to say? They're saying, I don't like what it says, but how many people are saying, what do I want it to say? And they write it down on a piece of paper and they send it to their senator and said, please put this into the law. I want every farmer under $500,000, like the Tester Amendment, to be exempt from this stupid bill. How many people are supporting the Tester Amendment? These amendments have to go into law, and that's what the people can do. They can support the language that will fight this corrupt system that we have.
Our whole system is corrupt.
And if they're in a situation where they're in a town where a police officer goes into somebody's home, they call up the mayor and they say, what the heck were you thinking? What is going on in our town where something like this could happen?
Well, there's going to be a pushback. I'm out in middle America all the time, and I want to tell you something. These dilettante little royalists in Washington, D.C., are within the next 2 years, there will be a flashpoint where there's only so much you can humiliate people, degrade people, disempower people before they finally stand up, are going to get a wake-up lesson on what it means when the majority of Americans stand up and push back. And when they push back, they're going to push hard. Mark my words. I'm out there. I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then watch the next SWAT team comes, and there'll be about 40,000 guys coming after them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, you're going to have it here. This is not going to be another, you know, case where Homeland Security can do anything, violate any rule, law, ethics, and all these private contracting security companies who've gotten their no-bid contracts through the corporate lobbyists and the ex-people within the military and the ex-people in the legislative aides and legislators who dominate our entire legal process. No, these are going to just be people say, you mean I can't buy this, I can't grow that, and yeah, the person said you do, they're going to come and arrest you, and they can do anything. Once they arrest you, they could do anything they want, and you won't have any recourse.
Mm-hmm.
Watch how long. Yeah, you know, if
right.
you're not,
we have to take back the country.
Trust me, Diane Miller, you're an attorney, you're a respected attorney, you're a co-founder and board member of the National Health Freedom Coalition. When I tell you that I'm seeing such palpable anger in America of people who feel betrayed by the Democrats and Republicans, mm-hmm. and from this giant upheaval will come mm-hmm. a new coalition mm-hmm. from the constitutionalists, the Greens, the mm-hmm. Libertarians, the independents and progressives.
Yeah.
But that will take first to have the crisis. The crisis
mm-hmm.
hasn't occurred yet,
mm-hmm.
but boy, the evidence is there. So
yeah.
Let's do this. I'm going to ask people to contact your foundation. I'm going to ask you to be the voice on this lead issue to get the right legislation, the right wording to protect our freedoms, because you know how to write the rules to get them into the law that protects us, just like we got the DeShays amendments in there. I went to 125 towns in America. I debated the former commissioner of the FDA. Look, I want you to be the person that gets this law passed, because we need that, and we need the people to say no. A vile, evil, un-American bill, Senate Bill 510, the sponsors behind it, and they're the ones who want to put all the small business people out of business. Not just put them out. These people are sadistic. They want to punish you. Because if you don't want to punish people, then you don't put draconian legislation in there for 5 years in prison or $50,000 fines. Any doctor using any non-approved medication or non-approved medical technique, which means all alternative medical practice would have been ended, would have had all their possessions and gone and fines and been in jail. No, you want to punish people. You want to be dominant. You want to be like the new Mao Zedong and the new Cultural Revolution, destroy the intellects, destroy the creative people. I'm very concerned that America has gone to hell. I'm concerned that we're not going there. We're already there. I'm concerned the average person is unfocused on the real issues, and those that are organizing and pushing back. So I'm asking this audience right now, you contact the nationalhealthfreedom.org, nationalhealthfreedom.org, nationalhealthfreedom.org. My guest, Linda Miller, the attorney, she will draft the legislation to challenge S-510. Now, I have 45 articles up on GaryNall.com. I mean, I don't care who's in power. The real power is the power behind the people that we think are powerful who control this. Final thoughts from you, Diane Miller.
Well, Gary, I appreciate all that you do to make this country come alive again with its heart and soul. And I know we can do it. And
we will
know that
do
if
it.
We all work together, we are going to do it. It's going to be a shift that is going to really make this country blossom into its maturity that it really has the capability of. Thank you.
Every one of the people in this audience, when we reach out to millions of people, they're going to get on the horn. They're going to tell their legislators no. And all they have to do is go to your website to be fully informed, and go to my website, GaryNall.com or Progressive Radio Network, to read the actual legislation and the articles against Monsanto. Thank you very much, Diane Miller.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Again, nationalhealthfreedom.org, nationalhealthfreedom.org. I'm going to take some calls in the remaining 8 minutes of our program, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And give Democracy Now! A call and say, we oppose what you are advocating for. Do your homework in the future. Thank you.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
I'd like to welcome you to our program. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to Anna from New York City. Hi, Anna.
Gary, would you please make a comment on Nordic organic seed vault?
Okay, I'm going to be doing that as an extensive discussion on tomorrow's program. There is what is called the Doomsday Seed Vault in the Arctic, and these are people who are putting together what is called the Svalbard Global Seed Vault on the Norwegian island of Spitsbergen, a part of the Svalbard Island group, and in fact, it's only about 1,000 kilometers from the North Pole. It's a barren piece of rock, and they have this seed bank, but you won't see the organic seeds there. You see the genetically engineered seeds. Why is it there? What is the connection? I'll deal with that on tomorrow's program in depth. Now, I have no other calls right now, so let me finish off with a commentary by Robert Jensen from commonreads.org. When the 4th Striker Brigade, the 2nd Infantry Division, rolled out of Iraq last week, the colonel commanding the brigade told a reporter that his soldiers were leaving as heroes. While we can understand the pride of professional soldiers and the emotion behind that statement, it's time for Americans, military and civilian, to face a difficult reality. In 7 years of the deceptively named Operation Iraqi Freedom and 9 years of Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, no member of the U.S. has been a hero. This is not an attack on soldiers, sailors, or Marines. Military personnel may act heroically in specific situations, showing courage and compassion. But for them to be heroes, in the truest sense, they must be engaged in a legal and morally justified conflict. That is not the case with U.S. invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan, and the social pressure on us to use the language of heroism or risk being labeled callous or traitorous undermines our ability to evaluate the politics and ethics of wars in a historical framework. The legal case is straightforward. Neither invasion had the necessary approval of the United Nations Security Council. Neither was a response to an imminent attack. In both cases, U.S. officials pretended to engage in diplomacy but demanded war. Under international law in the U.S. Constitution, Article 6 is clear that, quote, all treaties made, such as UN Charter, are, quote, the supreme law of the land. Both invasions were illegal. The moral case is also clear. U.S. officials claimed that the invasions were necessary to protect us from terrorism or locate weapons of mass destruction, were never plausible, and have been exposed as lies. The world is a more dangerous place today than it was in 2001, when sensible changes in U.S. foreign policy and vigorous law enforcement in collaboration with other nations could have made us safer. The people who bear the greatest legal and moral responsibility for these crimes are the politicians who send the military to war and the generals who plan the actions, and it may seem unfair to deny the frontline service personnel the label of hero when they did their duty as they understood it. But this talk of heroism is part of the way we avoid politics and deny the unpleasant fact that these are imperial wars. U.S. military forces are in the Middle East and Central Asia not to bring freedom, but to extend and deepen U.S. power in a region home to the world's most important energy resources. The nation exercises control there and to influence its over the global economy. And despite all the U.S. propaganda, the world realizes we have tens of thousands of troops on the ground because of those oil and gas revenues. That is the facts. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. We look forward to sharing more tomorrow.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.